Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, growing complaints about the Trump administration response to the devastation in Puerto Rico as a result of Hurricane Maria. Our guest is Rosa Clemente, an Afro-Latinx political commentator and community organizer. And although Angela Merkel came out ahead in the recent German elections, a surprising surge by the AfD, Germany's far-right party. What does this mean for Germany and for Europe? We discuss the German election with Jürgen Nogai, who is based in the city of Bremen, Germany. And the impact on Black immigrants by Trump's rescinding of DACA. We speak with Michael Williams and Pastor Q of Black Lives Matter. It is part of our series, Campaigners for Black Lives. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandary. Arch-conservative former Alabama Supreme Court Chief Justice Roy Moore easily won the Republican Party nomination for the Senate seat vacated by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Moore's nearly 56% win defied support from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Trump for the appointed incumbent Luther Strange. Former White House strategist Steve Bannon supported Moore. Still, Moore said he's ready to support Donald Trump and his policies.
Together we can make America great. We can support the president. As long as it's constitutional, as long as it advances our society, our culture, our country, I will be supportive. I believe we can make America great, but we must make America good, and you cannot make America good without acknowledging the sovereign source of that goodness, the sovereign source of our law, liberty, and government, which is Almighty God.
Trump tweeted his support for Moore after he won the nomination. The president deleted his former tweet supporting Strange. Moore was suspended as Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court last year after he defied the U.S. Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage. Moore similarly was kicked out in 2003 when he refused to remove a monument to the Ten Commandments from his courtroom. In 2001, he called sex between same-sex partners a heinous crime against nature and inherently evil. Last December, Moore said he didn't believe President Obama was born a U.S. citizen. The runoff election against Democrat Doug Jones takes place in December. A surprise announcement from Tennessee Republican Senator Bob Corker, who says he will not run for re-election next year. Corker chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He criticized Donald Trump after Trump blamed both white nationalists and anti-racist protesters for the violence at an August rally in Charlottesville. Corker then questioned whether Trump has shown the stability and competence to succeed in office. The federal government has dispatched large numbers of personnel to Puerto Rico to help in the aftermath of Hurricane Maria, but many across the island say they've yet to see anyone offering aid from the local or federal government. After stinging criticism for his administration, Donald Trump said yesterday he will travel to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. He also gave high ratings to his administration's response. Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, though, rebuked Trump.
Mr. President, Puerto Rico needs help from aid workers, not debt collectors from Wall Street. Yes, Puerto Rico needs debt relief, but first they need humanitarian relief. Water, food, medicine, fuel.
Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Republican Senators Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy abandoned their effort to push through legislation to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act after falling short of the 50 Republican votes needed to move forward. Cassidy said he was disappointed.
Through events that are under our control and not under our control, we don't have the votes. Okay? That's in speaking to the leadership, speaking to the president. I think Lindsay and he are on speed dial. We've made the decision, since we don't have the votes, we will postpone that vote.
The Graham-Cassidy legislation would have made devastating cuts to Medicaid. It would have hiked premiums for millions of people and weakened protections for people with pre-existing medical conditions. The effort foundered once Susan Collins of Maine joined John McCain and Rand Paul in saying she was a no vote. Republican leaders say they will now turn their attention to tax reform, likely involving large tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. A crowd of disability rights activists traveled to outside the home of Health and Human Services Secretary Tom Price this morning. They said they were willing to risk arrest. The activists said Price had not responded to their request to meet with him at his office to discuss their demands for federal funding for an expansion of home and community-based services as an alternative to nursing home care. Earlier this week, 181 disability rights activists were arrested at the state capitol when they disrupted the opening of a hearing on the Graham-Cassidy legislation. Saudi Arabia has become the last country on earth to allow women to drive. Saudi Arabia's ambassador to Washington and the king's son said letting women drive is a huge step forward and that society is ready. Women's rights activist Aziza Youssef said women were happy, but the professor at King Saud University also said the change is the first step in a lot of rights we are waiting for. The decree indicated women will not be allowed to drive immediately. A committee will be formed to look into how to implement the new order, which is slated to take effect in June of next year. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Donald Trump ended the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program put in place by the Obama administration. DACA, as it is known, allowed 800,000 youths to live in the United States. Since then, the Democratic leadership in the U.S. Congress were hopeful a few weeks ago after they supposedly struck a deal with Donald Trump to keep provisions in the DACA program while shoring up border security, excluding, we are told, a wall. Chuck Schumer, leader of the Democrats in the Senate, was overheard delighted after the meeting with Donald Trump, saying about Trump, quote, "I think he likes me." Nevertheless, many immigrants' rights activists and families impacted by DACA worried that Trump basically put the nail in the coffin of DACA. And angry youth confronted Nancy Pelosi, Democratic leader in the House of Representatives, in her home city of San Francisco, with a message that Democrats must not play political football with the lives of 800,000 young people as they cut deals with Trump. The NAACP earlier this month filed a lawsuit against the Trump administration on the basis that Trump's rescinding of DACA violated the Due Process Clause as well as the Equal Protection Clause of the Fifth Amendment. The majority of DACA youth hail from 15 countries from the global south, including Venezuela, the Dominican Republic, India, Jamaica, Philippines, Argentina, Colombia, South Korea, Brazil, Peru, Honduras, El Salvador, and Mexico. It is Mexico that has the greatest number of youth that will be impacted by Trump's move against DACA. Many forget, though, that there are a number of Black immigrants often left out of the conversation. According to the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, the leading countries for Black DACA youth are Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, and Nigeria. As part of our series, Campaigners for Black Lives, we will discuss all of this with Michael Williams and Pastor Q, both of whom are with Black Lives Matter LA. First, let me welcome Pastor Q. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Margaret. How are you doing?
Okay, I'm all right. And Michael Williams, welcome to you.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Okay. Now, Pastor Q, let us start with you. The NAACP is suing in, as I mentioned in the introduction, suing the Trump administration. Now, a lot of people, when one thinks of DACA youth, a lot of people think of Mexico. And of course, the vast majority, over 600,000, I think, of DACA youth are of Mexican heritage. But there are a number of youth also from mainly Black countries that are also going to be impacted by DACA, but also who are immigrants generally. I mean, I'm an immigrant from the Caribbean region, as many of my listeners know. So tell us your concern, Pastor Q, about DACA, and also the ways in which often Black and brown people are divided when it comes to the issue of immigration, or attempts to divide us on the issue of immigration.
Well, thank you for having me, Margaret. Yeah, one of the issues is that you kind of mentioned it. Most of the DACA recipients from Black countries are Jamaica, Haiti is up there as well, Nigeria, Ethiopia, Trinidad and Tobago, Ghana, Guyana, and so on, Kenya, and so on. So one of the problems we have is that there's always this issue of and Trump administration or other folks who work against immigrants saying that, well, you know, immigrants are taking Black jobs. And the answer to that is yes and no. We know that in 1966 or in the 1960s, European immigrants were funneled into the United States, 1.2 million to be exact, from 1960 to 1966. And you had Black folks actually migrating at about 500,000 from the South to the North and the West. And so when we talk about immigration, there were what they so-called unskilled labor. So that's where the unskilled labor was in the North and in the West. And so Black folks were migrating, but the government was immigrating Europeans into the United States, and they were getting those jobs first because we had to fight discrimination and racism in order to get those jobs. And by the time we got those jobs, there was the issue of deindustrialization. And so we came in, or Black folks came in at the end of that. And so never really got the full benefits of industrialization. I wanted to put that to rest because folks are always using this issue to separate Black and brown folks. So I wanted to definitely put that to rest.
And Michael, bringing you into this discussion, I mean, it is true that because I've heard some of it myself as an immigrant of, you know, some Black folks who were born in this country, not really ready to take up the fight for immigrants, you know, really falling for some of the misinformation and propaganda really put out there to try to divide our communities. And we know that there are attempts on a number of fronts, whether it is within the prisons by prison guards or, you know, out on the street, of the kind of setup of Black versus brown. I'd like you to just talk about that a little bit and some of what you all are attempting to do as Black Lives Matter with focusing on protection for immigrants. Michael.
Well, the thing is that immigration is a Black issue. It's something that is, again, we see that Black people are targeted heavily. If you look at the statistics, Black people make up about 7% of the immigrant population, but they're targeted 20% more for deportation than other groups. So we see that, again, we're being marginalized and we're being targeted disproportionately compared to to other races in this country. So the thing is that Black people have to understand that Black immigrants are suffering the same plight that we are suffering here in the United States. And as Black people, we have to understand that, for one, those jobs were never going to be ours, right? The jobs that we're complaining about that we're losing weren't going to be ours in the first place, right? We don't see that Black people are being hired, even immigrant Black people are being hired. So those jobs are not ours, right? We live in a white supremacist society where they were never going to allow us to have those jobs that we think they were lost. Those jobs were lost because of outsourcing and other different things that have happened over the years to get rid of those jobs. The second thing is that, again, black immigrants are suffering the same plight, and it's up to us to unite around each other and to not give in to divisive attacks that they try to use, that they've been using since the days of slavery, to try to divide us and make us feel that they're the other, that they're the problem, and not the system of white supremacy that we live under, but our own peers. And so what Black Lives Matter is trying to do is to let black people recognize, and not just black people, but society in general, that the immigration issue, the DACA issue, is a black issue, and that black people need to stick together in order to overcome the issues that we're facing.
Right. And Pastor Q, I mean, I happen to think that black-brown unity, or building some kind of black-brown unity, is vital for all of us. I mean, you know, I'm not convinced that any of us could really gain our freedom separately in our own isolated communities without really building those alliances and seeing what we have in common, at the same time standing in our own autonomous space. And I just wanted you to talk a bit about that, because when people think of Black Lives Matter, first of all, the definition of black is very narrow, right? For the most part, when people look at it in that way. But just talk a bit about your views on the working together of black and brown people. And it seems as though immigration and opposing what Trump is doing with DACA is an example of that, of the kind of coming together of those communities. Pastor Q.
Yes, Margaret. Well, we know that, you know, the DACA recipients are, or folks who are eligible for DACA, are only about, for black folks, are only about 5% of the DACA population.
Yeah.
And there's discrimination there as well. But we know that we have over 525,000 undocumented black immigrants, right? A lot of times folks don't know that. And as it relates to black and brown, I also work for CLU, Clergy and Laity United for Economic Justice. And CLU does a lot of immigration work in trying to get folks out of detention. We just got a pastor out of detention. They were attempting to deport. But as we talk about black and brown work, it is important for black folks. And that's why I stated what I stated earlier, to let us know that the immigration problem did not start today. The immigration problem started way back when America was attempting to keep the population mostly white. So they brought in, Dr. King talked about it, where he said they gave poor European immigrants land grants in order to get them into the United States. So this is just a shifting problem that we have. But we have at CLU, we have this organization, or this group called the Black and Brown Clergy and Community Alliance, along with SCIU, the unions, and the community. We call it We Will Live. And that can mean a lot of things, right? And one of the things we have to do is we have to live together. One statistic I want to bring up to show you how discrimination can play us against each other is that I'm from the Caribbean, by the way. I'm from St. Lucia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Originally, I was raised as an African American, but I was born in St. Lucia, right? So I understand this from a different perspective. And so when you think about the black immigrants who are in unions, black immigrants who are in unions make at least $7 more than African Americans who are not part of unions. Think about that for a minute, right? So as we talk about DACA and we talk about all these things, all these wedges they're trying to insert and divide us, this is one of the issues they have, because I hear all the time our black immigrants from countries like where I'm from would buy into that rhetoric and say, well, it's because African Americans are lazy. I know you've heard that because you're a black immigrant, right? But These are the kind of commentaries we have to be careful with, right? Discrimination is at the heart of this. There are two reasons why we lose jobs, right? The changing nature of the American economy and racism. That's what is said in the Kerner Report, the National Advisory of Civil Disorders, when we had 163 riots in the summer of 1967, and Lyndon B. Johnson, the president at the time, called the Kerner Commission together, which consisted of 123 social scientists looking at the work of W.E.B. Du Bois and all of that. I mean, we don't have time to go into all of that, but I'm saying this thing is deeper than folks think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're quite right, because even among Black folks, between Black immigrants to the United States and Black people who were born and raised in this country, we get a hint, too, of some of those divides. And Michael, back to you. I mean, I was trained in the movement at the time that we were much more Pan-Africanist, and there was really a more of a Black, and the word Black uniting us, whether we were on the continent of Africa, in the Caribbean region, Central Latin America, etc. And I've raised before on this show that I was very worried when the term Afro-American and then African-American came in. I understand the importance of claiming one's culture and that connection to Africa, but it seemed too that there was a kind of a political shift of, well, we have to be concerned about what is going on here in the United States and really not the rest of the diaspora. So I was very glad to speak with, Patrice Cullors from Black Lives Matter and others who have, a broader view. And perhaps it is within that broader view and that context that those of you who are active with Black Lives Matter are also looking at this issue of immigration. Just some final thoughts from you, Michael.
Yeah. My father is from Costa Rica.
Mm-hmm.
When my grandmother came here, she was instantly tried, like, white. Her white coworkers, she worked at a nursing, she worked as a nurse at a hospital. Her white coworkers, because she was lighter and because she wasn't from this country, they tried to automatically segregate her from those who were from here, Black people who were from here, from America, born here. And it's, like I said, it's a tactic that they've used a lot to try to divide us, or try to make us feel like others are above us. And I think Pan-Africanism is important because we have to learn that we all are in the same similar struggle, right? We're all struggling for freedom and for liberation and for our own independence from a state that doesn't care about us and shows it in every way possible. And I think that Black Lives Matter especially has been working to make this not just an American movement, not just to make this about what's going on here in our own country, but about what's going on in other countries. Black Lives Matter has spread across the globe. There's movements in London, Brazil, New Zealand, of all places. There's all over the world. There is a cry saying that the state of Black people in the world is at a dire strait, and it's time for the world to look at how white supremacy has played a part across the globe in global anti-Blackness, and how we as Black people, not just here in America, but as a global community, work and together to strive to make all of our lives better and make our lives more liberated going on in the future. And I think Black Lives Matter has done a great job in doing that and making sure that we're always not just looking at what's going on here in America, but looking at what's going on here, going on worldwide.
Right. And Pastor Q, we will give you an opportunity also for people who want to get involved with Black Lives Matter, including in particular the issue around immigration and also the We Will Live grouping that you talked about. But, you know, part of it in terms of just having a real conversation to come together as Black and Brown people. It's also wherever we are, whether it is in Central America or in Latin America, those of us who are darker, let's say in are, you know, more discriminated against. I mean, that is just the reality of it. A lot of people don't even know that there are Black Mexicans, that there is such a thing as Black Mexicans. There's a huge Black population in Honduras with the Garifuna and in Nicaragua and other parts of Central America. And of course, Brazil has the largest Black population in the entire Western Hemisphere. But certainly when I visited places like Peru, for example, and even in Guatemala. In Guatemala, people will insult you by calling you Indio, meaning indigenous, or Negro, or Black, right? So that's also a conversation that we need to have, and not really to cover that over, but to have a real conversation about that as a way of confronting it and moving forward together. Pastor Q.
Yes, indeed. I think one of the issues we try to do with the Black and Brown is to try and bring out those things. I think one of the issues is education, right? We need to educate each other, and we need to know that the issues that we're facing are not new, right? I used to be part of a group on Virgin Records called the College Boys. Our hit song was Victim of the Ghetto. It came out in 1992 when the riots broke out, and yeah, that was the theme song of the ghetto, right? And so we know that whenever we do a song, we would do a remix. And the remix is not really that different from the original song. So America has been remixing the same song over and over again. And so we know, even with the current president, that his divisiveness, that's his strategy, right? It's to highlight what's so different about us and what one group is benefiting from that the other group is not benefiting from, right? But it's all of us or none, really, as it relates to immigration. Like I said, we have 525 undocumented Black immigrants, but part of the divisiveness is that, hey, we're not going to say that. We're only going to put it on Latinos because they're in close proximity, right? So we're only going to say it's Latinos or Latinx, but we don't highlight the other groups that are immigrants. And so that's what we try to do with the We Will Live coalition, is that we try to have those conversations and bring ourselves together to understand really the issues that are affecting us.
Right. Well, we're out of time. There's a lot more to discuss on this. There's the TPS, or temporary protected status, that's really impacting Haitians in particular, with a number of Haitians, thousands of Haitians now being threatened to being deported, being sent back to Haiti and having their temporary protected status removed. So we're going to have to continue this conversation. But either Michael or Pastor Q, tell us, for people who want to get involved and support your efforts, what should they do?
Well, you can go on to Facebook and follow Black Lives Matter Los Angeles on Facebook. You can also donate. Again, you can go on Facebook or blacklivesmatter.com and donate to Black Lives Matter, local work that's going on in local communities. Yeah.
Okay. All righty. Well, and we want to thank Black Lives Matter LA. We partner with Black Lives Matter LA. And in particular, I'd like to thank Dr. Melina Abdullah for our weekly Campaigners for Black Lives. I hope we can continue this conversation, Michael Williams and Pastor Q. Thank both of you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All righty. This is Margaret Prescott. We're going to take a short station break. And coming up, the right wing on the rise in Germany, of all places. We'll be discussing the German election with Jürgen Nogai, who's based on the ground in Bremen, Germany. And then Rosa Clemente will be joining us on the devastation of Puerto Rico and the lack of action of the Trump administration. We'll be right back.
No.
and the late, great Bob Marley, No Woman, No Cry. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. You can listen to our show anywhere in the country and indeed the world. We also would like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners, and today we'd like to welcome our SoundCloud listeners throughout the nation of Germany. And you can check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, please like and friend us on Facebook. Before we go to the German election, let us go now to our weekly Earth Minute.
The International Day of Struggle Against Monoculture Tree Plantations was launched in September 2004 by social movements in Brazil. It has been held every September since to highlight the global effort to denounce the impacts of large-scale tree plantations and to stop them. These impacts include clear-cutting of native forests to make room for new plantations, forced displacement of indigenous peoples in forest-dependent communities, loss of wildlife, depletion and contamination of water, and destruction of forest biodiversity. But while this day calls attention to these serious problems, it also celebrates the resistance and solidarity of social movements around the world who are struggling to protect their communities by saying, no more tree plantations. For the Earth Minute and the Sojourner Truth Show, this is Ann Peterman from Global Justice Ecology Project.
All right, and by the way, for those of you who are wondering, the music in our Earth Minute, Australian Aboriginal music, Indigenous people of Australia, the didgeridoo. Over the past few years, far-right populism has surged into influence in countries across Europe, also in the United States, from UKIP and Brexit to Geert Wilders and the Party of Freedom in the Netherlands to Marine Le Pen and the National Front in France. Now, both Wilders and Le Pen lost in their election bid. Germany's test of strength against the far right came on Sunday, September 14th, in the country's first national election since 2013. Over the past 4 years, German Chancellor Angela Merkel stood out in Europe for Germany's welcome to refugees, taking in hundreds of thousands in 2015 alone. Germany's far right party, called Alternative for Germany, or AFD, they capitalize on this wave of newcomers and people's fears, stirring xenophobia, racism, and promising to take our country. Take back our country. Does that sound familiar? In Sunday's election, both of Germany's major parties, Merkel's Conservative Christian Democratic Union and the center-left Social Democratic Party, maintained their relative majorities, but they both faltered, together losing more than 100 seats. Most of those seats went to rising parties, and a whopping 94 seats went to the right-wing Alternative for Germany, making it now the third largest force in the German parliament, and as the Guardian of newspaper of London noted, quote, the first openly nationalist party to enter the German parliament since the Second World War. Let us go now to a brief clip from Euronews on the German election.
Cracks are appearing in the leadership of Germany's far-right AfD party within hours of its electoral success on Monday. The highest-profile figure in its more moderate wing stormed out of its victory news conference and abandoned its parliamentary group. 42-year-old Franka Petri has been the most recognizable face in the Alternative for Germany, or AfD, during its swift rise over the past 2 years. However, she says she can't stand with an anarchistic party that lacks a credible plan to govern and would sit as an independent. Petri's husband, Markus Pretzel, also says he will leave. Petri says the AfD should be open to coalition government. However, other party figures say it should stick to opposition. All established parties have refused to work with the AfD. Voters, however, are in no doubt. It's a catastrophe, she says, that so many people have voted for the AfD. We in Germany should know better. The AfD has nothing to do with Germany's past, he says. What they stand for ruins everything that Germany's been doing for the past 60 to 70 years to make amends. The anti-immigrant AfD shocked the establishment by winning 12.6% of the vote in Sunday's election after a campaign that channeled public anger at Chancellor Angela Merkel's 2015 decision to leave Germany's border open to migrants.
All right, and here to discuss all of this, I'd like to welcome a German-born Jürgen Nogai. He is a high school teacher and professional photographer based in Bremen, Germany. His photography career has spanned over three decades. While living in Los Angeles, which he did for a while, he was a longtime collaborator with the late acclaimed photographer Julius Shulman. Nogai and Shulman were published in a variety of books and magazines, and their clients included the Annenberg Space for Photography, the Getty Trust, the Griffith Observatory, the City of Los Angeles, among others. Jürgen returned to his home, Germany, where he is now continuing his career as a photographer, and he's also a high school teacher. Jürgen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jürgen, many of us looked with some alarm at not only what was happening in the U.S. with the rise and then the election of Trump, but also in Europe. In the intro, I mentioned the Netherlands with Geert Wilders and Marine Le Pen in France, both of whom were defeated. But now we see what to some people is a kind of a shocking result, perhaps not for you, but for people in other parts of the world, because nobody likely would have thought that this nationalist party, a right-wing nationalist party with an anti-immigrant and some would say racist agenda, would now be the third largest party in the German parliament, especially given what happened during the Second World War. Jürgen, your take on how this happened.
How that happened, you know, I think it's first we have to say that Angela Merkel did really not a great job in the last 4 years, she was not explaining her politics in that way, how she was dealing with our refugee problems and how she was dealing with Europe. And so a lot of people got scared. And they really got kind of disappointed.
Scared because of the flux of immigrants coming in, refugees?
Yes, the immigrants coming in, and then Europe, you know, we had this whole thing with taking care about Greece, the financial crisis in Greece, and taking care about Greece. And then, you know, Europe is very, very divided, too, in countries like Poland, Hungary, and the Czech Republic, which are not in any way willing to take some refugees, and Germany, Denmark, France, they're taking the most. So there's a big gap between these countries, and Europe slowly has to grow together, and everybody was waiting for that. And Angela Merkel was just sitting it out, and she was just waiting. And you see, yesterday, this speech of Macron in France was a complete different thing. So he wants that Europe is growing more together, and he wants that Europe is also building up kind of what the U.S. has, the United States of Europe. And because we're not getting these things together and we're just waiting and sitting and doing nothing, people are getting scared. So this was kind of a result. You know, one thing I really want to say first, in France, you have Marine Le Pen with 30%. In Germany, you have this AfD with 12%. So there's a big difference.
Yeah.
I don't want to say this is not this is okay or whatever. No, we have to watch it. We have to watch it, and we have to be really aware about all these things happening in everywhere in the world. I mean, you have your same situation in America. And so we have to figure out what is happening. Why are people getting so scared? And why are they moving more and more to the right? Why are they looking for leaders? Yeah, and then mostly they are getting the wrong leaders. Why are they not getting into politics, real politics?
It's quite a contrast, I'll have to say, with the UK, where the Labour Party, headed by Jeremy Corbyn, who is very much on the left, just had their convention, and they are riding high. I mean, everyone thought that Jeremy Corbyn, really to the left of even somebody like Bernie Sanders, never would have won the election in the UK. But right now, you have the Labour Party in the UK as the largest kind of progressive or left-leaning party in Europe. But just in the little time that we have left, the pro-business Free Democratic Party gained 80 seats, we're told. The Greens, only 4 seats, right? I thought the Greens were a bit stronger in Germany. And a party called the Left got 5 seats. What does this mean in terms of the balance in Parliament?
No. They had more seats.
They had more seats? Okay.
Yeah, they have more seats. That is a misunderstanding. So we have 709 seats in the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Green Party and the Liberals, they are in a kind of discussion with the coalition with the Christ Democratic Union and the Christ Social Union. You know, the Christ Social Union is a party in Bavaria. It's the same like the Christ Democratic Union, but they are in Bavaria. And so there are sister parties. So in these 3 parties or 4 parties are trying to get a coalition together.
Okay.
And so that they will have around about 380 seats.
All together.
So the Green Party, the Green Party, the Liberals, they have, I don't remember now the direct numbers, but they have a lot of seats. So the 4 seats doesn't work.
Right.
But I can tell you, how the the problems are now. The Green Party and the Liberals are not really parties that can work together in no way, because the Liberals also want to close up Germany for refugees, and they want to, and also the Christ Social Union from Bavaria, they want to have a number, and they say, okay, we want to have a number. We let in 150,000 refugees in a year, and that's it. But you cannot do that. You know, if there is a million of refugees sitting somewhere in Italy, and they have to move forward,
yeah,
you cannot just let them sit there and let Italy deal with all these problems. So we have to get them in. And these parties are in some ways divided. And then there are other problems. We have the Green Party about the ecological problems, and the Liberals, and they're more for the economy, for the rising of economy. And so I don't know how that will happen. The problem is, what happens if we get new elections? And then I would be scared, because I think that would bring more people to this right wing AfD, because are getting more scared that it's not going on in Germany anymore. And you know, we have a lot of people there not very well informed.
Yeah,
and these are the people this AfD is using. And you know, I really would like to say a couple of words to this AfD, because I really think...
Yeah, Jürgen, you'll tell us quickly, because we're out of time. We have to move on to the Puerto Rico disaster.
So I can just give you some quotes. What this guy, the head of the AfD, Alexander Gauland, said is, we are calling up for the hunt against Angela Merkel. We want to hunt her down.
Mm.
I mean, we know sentences like that. Or they're saying the memorial, the Jewish memorial in Berlin, is disgusting for Germany.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
How can you say that? All people say, also Gauland said, the French are proud about the king, and we Germans should be proud about our soldiers of the First and Second World War. You know, we are getting embarrassed. I know people like me are getting embarrassed about people of the AFD putting these sentences out in the world.
Right. And it kind of reminds me of the kinds of things we heard in the United States in Charlottesville. Jürgen, we're going to have to continue this conversation another time because we really are out of time. And there's so much more you have to say and so much more we want to find out. But we appreciate you joining us and having this opening discussion on what's happening in Germany. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Margaret.
All righty. Thank you. This is Margaret Prescott. What I'd like to do now is to go on to what is happening in Puerto Rico. Just outrageous what is going on and who's going to break all of it down for us. I'd like to welcome Rosa Clemente. She is Afro-Latinx political commentator, community organizer, independent journalist. And in 2008, she was the Green Party's vice presidential candidate. Rosa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret. I appreciate it.
Rosa, we're only now beginning to get some news about the depth of the tragedy, the catastrophe going on in Puerto Rico. And Donald Trump seems oblivious to it, while there are all these claims of like, well, there's all this great help coming into Puerto Rico, of course, devastated as a result of Hurricane Maria. Break this down for us. What's going on?
Well, immediately what's happening on the island is that 97% of the people are still without electricity or access to water, which means many people have been forced to drink from streams or rivers. And because of the environmental situation that had already been in Puerto Rico, we're the home to over 32 Superfund sites. It sounds insane, but that's how environmentally destroyed Puerto Rico has been. Also, people will obviously know that the water has been contaminated. As well, all of the relief supplies, for the most part, are going into the city of San Juan, which anybody from a Caribbean nation or just in general, we call it a campo in Puerto Rico. Most people don't live in San Juan. They live in parts of Puerto Rico that aren't accessible via a bridge, only accessible by smaller transportation vehicles, and that's not even existing right now. So there's so many people that have not been fully accounted for. And the fear is that within the next 48 hours that we are going to see, as one of my friends called it, a slow genocide.
Oh, my God.
Those elderly people that don't have electricity or don't have electricity for their dialysis, can't keep their insulin refrigerated, don't have insulin. For older people or folks on oxygen tanks, those also, you know, that has run out for many people. Obviously, not having access to water, a human being can only survive for how long, right? Really, what needs to happen and what people need to be doing immediately is getting on their congressional representative to force Trump and his Republican cabinet or whatever white supremacists that are up there, if you can force them to release disaster aid. Because Trump yesterday and his folks said that they're going to wait 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, there will be thousands of people that could die, if not more. We don't have 2 weeks. Mm. We don't even have 2 days right now. And lastly, rolling back the Jones Act. So the Jones Act is a mercantile law. It's also the act that prevents, in Puerto Rico specifically, other nations that want to bring relief, whether it be Cuba, doctors, they want to send doctors. Mexico wants to send supplies. Venezuela wants to send oil because also we're running out of gas. Those boats cannot go directly to Puerto Rico because of the Jones Act. Oh. They have to go through the United States, get to Florida, then from Florida get permission from the government to go to Puerto Rico. And we need a repeal or rollback of that act right now.
You know, Rosa, it just breaks my heart listening to this. And we haven't even talked about what's going on in Dominica and St. Croix and St. John and St. Thomas. Also devastated. And I for our listeners, I'll give an update on those Caribbean islands tomorrow. But, you know, listening to mainstream media and they're talking about, well, Puerto Rico is demanding or asking for aid from the United States, as though, you know, Puerto Rico is not, well, I think a colony, but, you know, part allegedly of the United States. But there's definitely that, you know, double standard. And also I heard that even a capitalist outlet like American Airlines were saying that they wanted to fly in a number of flights with supplies on the ground, and they were stopped from doing so. They were told you could only do one. I think now it's up to two flights a day. But meanwhile, you have the U.S. military kind of taking over and flying their planes in. So there's that whole kind of colonial relationship and the devaluation of the lives of some of us who happen to be from the global South. Rosa.
Yeah, well, Puerto Ricans are American citizens, right? So if people want to say that, I'm good with that at the present moment, although we're colonial subjects, because we are.
Yeah.
And as the Jones Act and other things were suspended to get relief to those people in Florida and in Texas, it should be the same. But the larger issue is that Puerto Rico is a colony. Our crisis is colonialism, American imperialism. Our crisis is that we have a governor that would rather repay the debt than fix the electrical grid on the island. Mm. The infrastructure was weak already. Now, our governor is Republican and is good with Trump. That says a lot about his governance in the last 2 or 3 years, his support of PROMESA, which also weakened infrastructures, hospitals, and schools, right? So people have to understand that on the larger issue that we'll get through this as a people, but this is now even a bigger push for why Puerto Rico needs to be an independent nation. Caribbean nations like Jamaica want to help us, and they're not allowed to because they have to wait to get permission from the United States government. When Irma hit and Puerto Ricans were hit, you saw Puerto Ricans on their boats go to St. Thomas and
That's
the Virgin
right.
Islands and Barbuda. Those folks cannot do that for us, even though they want to. And lastly, we need a whole cancellation of the debt. To me, Puerto Rico is not in financial crisis. We don't owe a debt. America owes us reparations.
That's right.
And this is the time where we have to push for that, as well as the immediate needs of our people. And I just implore everyone listening, anyone who is progressive, left, the third parties that I've heard nothing from on this case, the activists, the organizers, we need y'all to step up right now.
Mm.
This is a Katrina times thousand, thousand.
Yeah.
And anybody who covered Katrina like me or you, Margaret, or saw the devastation and a decade later, the trauma that people still feel for that, feel what that could be like for us as Puerto Ricans right now.
Well, Rosa, you're bringing tears to my eyes and I'm sure to many of our listeners. And we hope that they will heed what you are saying. And you're telling everybody contact their elected official and really officials and push them to do something to stop what you're calling a slow genocide. We know that you're really up.
And just know too, Margaret, like, you know, I have family that I have not been able to contact. They are elderly people. They are my family that we don't know what's happening. And because we are Puerto Rican diasporic people and all over the United States, people like me and my comrades and friends are literally on the edge because we cannot communicate. So I just really thank you for this opportunity. And
well, come back, Rosa. We wish.
Yeah, no, I'll come back.
Come back.
The work that we can do here as Puerto Ricans right now, because so many of us want to go, but we can't.
Yeah.
We can do the work of organizing and activating and pushing our folks even more. So I hope people take the opportunity to also hit me up, because we are responding to everyone who is ready to stand up for Puerto Rico.
Right. And anything we can do to help, we would be ready to do that. Rosa Clemente, we wish you, we hope your family are safe, and we will talk with you again soon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret.
We're out of time. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team. Everyone, we're out of time. You know who you are. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.